This is The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Mike and Scott. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's a new book about a man who was essential to our understanding of how memory works, though he himself was not able to remember any of his contributions, not the experiments he was the focus of that spanned more than five decades, not the researchers he saw day after day, year after year. Until his death in 2008, he was only known as Patient HM, but his full name is Henry Mollison. This book about his life is called Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets. The author, Luke Dietrich, has a very personal connection to this story. We'll get to that in a moment. But Luke started out by telling me about Mollison's epileptic seizures during childhood, which became absolutely debilitating as he got older.
By the time he was 27 years old, his parents and he himself were all very sort of desperate to find some sort of treatment, some sort of cure, and they turned to a neurosurgeon named William Scoville, who was a renowned neurosurgeon, a brilliant technical surgeon by all accounts. He taught at Yale, was the founder and director of the Hartford Hospital's Department of Neurosurgery, and he told them that he would like to perform an experimental operation on Henry. He proposed removing some deep-seated structures bilaterally in Henry's brain from Henry's medial temporal lobes, his hippocampus, amygdala, uncus, portions of them.
And Luke, what was the state of brain surgery at that time? That was, you said it was an experimental surgery, but had any been done? Did they know what they were doing?
You know, there were operations on this part of the brain that were done to treat epilepsy, but they were done only unilaterally. He, this surgeon, who I should say was my grandfather, Dr. Scoville, he had performed this same type of operation prior to the operation he performed on HM, but he had only performed it under sort of drastically different circumstances. He had performed it in asylums to treat psychosis and other forms of mental illness.
And were you able to speak to your grandfather about this story?
No, I never spoke with him about it. He died when I was 9 years old.
So what happened to Henry? The operation did not go as planned.
It did not go as planned. It pretty quickly became clear that Henry was no longer able to create new, you know, long-term memories. You know, the present moment would just sort of slide off of him. He lived the rest of his life, more than a half century, in more or less 30-second increments. It was a profound and devastating and catastrophic amnesia.
So describe that for us. If he
right.
met you, or if he met a new person, after 30 seconds, he would forget them again.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fascinating things about Henry was that on the surface, he could seem quite normal. You might have a conversation with him, and if the conversation didn't last all that long, you might not realize anything was wrong with him. But if you did step out of the room and came back in, you know, a minute, 2 minutes later, he would introduce himself to you, and it would be as though you'd never met.
And when did Henry become the subject of such intense study on memory?
A couple of years after the operation. So the operation took place in 1953. And a couple of years later, there's a brilliant neuropsychologist who's still at McGill University, Brenda Milner. She's in her 90s now and is still an active researcher. She had a hunch at that point that these medial temporal lobe structures might be essential to long-term memory creation. And so she heard about this operation that my grandfather had performed on Henry, and she realized that Henry was a perfect test case, and she began conducting experiments with him. Ultimately, Henry was, in some senses, inherited by a student of Dr. Milner's named Suzanne Corkin, and she studied Henry for several decades until his death.
And when did you first realize your personal connection to this case?
The case of Patient HM is something I've been sort of has been a part of my family lore for as long as I can remember. I think I always knew that this was a story that at some point I was going to have to tackle. The operation he performed on patient HM within my family, I think, was often sort of viewed as, you know, this one mistake he had made. And they thought it was unfortunate that people would focus on this mistake rather than on all the good that he had accomplished. What I discovered, though, is that it wasn't really an isolated mistake, and that in order to understand the story of patient HM, you really had to look at this, you know, long-term campaign of what's hard not to call, you know, human experimentation that was conducted in you know, the backwards of asylums and in hospitals around the country during the 1930s, 40s, and early 1950s, during this sort of psychosurgical era, which is when, you know, the doctors believed that they could cure mental illness by lesioning specific parts of the brain. I found this chilling letter written by the head of the Department of Physiology at Yale University, who was trying to encourage another physiologist to spend time with my grandfather to study my grandfather's lobotomized patients. And he said, "You really should go and spend time with him because Dr. Scoville has been given unlimited access to the psychiatric material of this asylum." And I had to read it twice before I realized that psychiatric material meant human beings. I mean, these were viewed as disposable.
If we return to patient HM, what did we learn from him? What are some of the big findings that are tied to him?
Well, there are the two major findings that Brenda Milner discovered. One, that these particular structures in the brain are essential for long-term memory creation. Two, that there are two distinct and seemingly independent memory systems in the brain, that HM could learn new tasks even though he would never remember having learned them. He endured a lot, but a lot was built out of sort of his suffering. He taught us a huge amount about what memory, how memory works. I'd also say that a close look at his story, I found, is also illuminating, not just in terms of memory science, but in terms of how we go about pursuing our sometimes sort of ruthless quest for knowledge. I mean, I think that his case does raise some serious questions of research and medical ethics that should never be forgotten.
Luke, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Luke Dietrich is the author of Patient HM, A Story of Memory, Madness, and Family Secrets.